Please be aware that this episode on sex addiction has reference to sex and sexual activity, and it is very advisable to use discretion while listening, for it is not meant for all audiences. Hello everyone, my name is Dr. Mahjubeen Islam.
And I am Dr. Kathleen Daniels.
And we want to thank you for listening to our Treat Addiction podcast. The information in this podcast cannot replace your seeking professional help. If you or a loved one are struggling with sex addiction, contact the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration or SAMHSA's National Helpline at 1-800-662-HELP or 1-800-662-4357 for information on support and treatment facilities in your area. And the material in this episode is not meant for all audiences, and we advise you to please use discretion while listening. Our episode today is on the addiction to sex, and we hope to explain and help in its treatment. Sex is considered a basic human need, and there can obviously be variation in sexual needs and preferences. In sexual addiction, it can make it difficult for someone to control their urges, thoughts, and impulses surrounding sexual activities. And often the individual engages in behaviors excessively, even when it causes harmful negative consequences. And I think it's important to understand, like in any addiction, people will become very flippant about people who are addicted to opioids or alcohol or other drugs and blame them and say that it's a personal weakness or a character failure, not understand. And that, or either that, or they'll say that, oh, that the person is just having a good time. And I just want to tell people again and again that the person is not having a good time. They're just going through the cycle of withdrawal and use and withdrawal and use. So people recognize that there are negative consequences, but they continue. Mm-hmm. Sex addiction cannot be found in the DSM-5, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, but it can still impact a person's quality of life and their mental and physical health. And it can be very destructive, just as addiction to chemical substances is. It can jeopardize marriage and family relationships, make job performance deteriorate. People endanger themselves and their partner through multiple sexual exposures. And they realize, even though they realize the consequences, like I said, they cannot control their compulsions, sometimes without appropriate recognition and then treatment. A lot of times, we'll talk about this, sexual addiction often coexists with chemical dependency. And unrelated sexual addiction contributes to relapse to the chemical use or the substance use. And people really put their loved ones in danger because of exposure to sexually transmitted diseases and HIV.
Indeed. And although we just mentioned that this particular addiction is not listed in the DSM, you'll find the other disorders such as sexual dysfunctions, erectile dysfunction, orgasmic dysfunction, masochism and sadism. You'll find those, but not quite this one. And yet the criteria is it exists, that these behaviors are there and are problematic. The concept of sexual addiction was introduced less than 10 years ago. It not only provides an explanation for otherwise irrational behavior, it not only provides an explanation for irrational behavior, but the continued persistence of these actions. It also suggests that there are effective treatments that we can offer. So what are the characteristics of this addiction? Well, you've heard this before, and we're going to say it again. It's the compulsivity. The behavior cannot be diminished easily, even when bad things happen. I had one patient years ago. I still remember, I don't remember her face, but I remember the discussions with her. She had an addiction, but she was married, and she just compelled her husband to come home every day at lunchtime. Yes, she did. He was able to satisfy her needs, and she didn't have to go out to satisfy those urges. The continuation of the behavior despite adverse consequences, even when people are having problems in their marriages or their work, and they're obsessed with it. And as physicians, we always look for patterns, and there is a pattern that emerges in this group. The preoccupation with sexual thoughts or activities, the failed attempts to reduce the behavior, even when it's causing harm, engaging in risky sexual behaviors such as unprotected sex or with multiple partners, using sex as a coping mechanism for stress, for anxiety, for emotional issues. And I'm thinking, when we watch television, the television presents sex as a way of living your life free of encumbrances. They make it sound as if it's an okay thing to go from partner to partner to partner, and they seldom show the negative consequences of the behavior, seldom. Sometimes because of these behaviors, people neglect their personal and professional or social responsibilities, and then it comes with feelings of guilt and shame and isolation at the end of the day.
Yeah, and I want to mention like two cases which will illustrate what you've talked about in terms of the cycle of sexual addiction and all that goes along with it. So a 32-year-old woman from a rigidly religious family married an alcoholic. After 2 years of marriage, she became involved in what was to be the first of many extramarital affairs. And to prevent detection by her husband, she withdrew from him emotionally, which is a lot of times what happens, and neglected the marital relationship. And she recognized that she was not spending enough time with her children, but despite feelings of guilt, she continued in that behavior and until she cheated on her new lover. Then another case is that of, because this one illustrates that people recognize that there's something very drastically wrong, but because it's a disease, it's a disorder, they are not able to. It's not like a bippity-boppity-boo and you're done. And the treatment, it takes some recognition and consequent treatment.
And I think similar to gambling addiction, a lot of people with these types of sexual addictions, it's the risky behavior that heightens their arousal and response.
And we're going to talk about how this is an arousal addiction.
Yeah.
This is going to be, we'll talk about that. So this 50-year-old married business executive neglected sales calls, went out of town and visited massage parlors and prostitutes, despite knowledge that he was risking HIV. He was once an effective salesman, but his work performance suffered because of his sexual pursuits. He took alternative routes. So now the, you know, just like in any addiction, the secrecy, the all of the other behaviors start. He took alternative routes on trips in an effort to avoid massage parlors, but he was unable to control his urge to visit these establishments. His wife learned about his sexual activities when he was arrested for soliciting sex from an undercover police woman posing as a prostitute. And at that point, his marriage was in jeopardy, his children and friends shocked, and his future uncertain. So when sexual behavior is compulsive and continued despite serious adverse consequences, it is an addiction.
It's an addiction.
So this is a key definition that we use for any and all addictions, that the behavior is compulsive and continued, and the person recognizes that there are a lot of negative consequences, but they're not able to stop. Sex addicts tend to sexualize other people and situations, finding sexual connotations in the most ordinary incident or remark. They spend great amounts of time or money in pursuit of a quick fix. They describe a euphoria with sex similar to that described by drug addicted patients that they describe their drug use. And this may be an effect of endorphins and other endogenous brain chemicals, whereas the drug-induced state is obviously externally produced by the drug. Researchers have classified sexual addiction as an arousal addiction because its effects on the brain are similar to the effects of cocaine, listen to this, amphetamines, compulsive gambling, and risk-taking behaviors. So it's the composite of that behavior or that addiction. In contrast, addiction to alcohol, sedatives, or hypnotics and food are considered satiation addictions. I would have classified without, dwelling on this as sex addiction as a satiation addiction, but it's not. It's an arousal addiction. like alcoholics and other addicted patients to drugs, sex addicts behavior engage in distorted thinking, rationalizing, defending, justifying their behavior while blaming others. This is a very key piece in addiction and in my addicted patients. In a simple thing, like if I tell them that, did you get lab work done that mm-hmm. I had ordered? Mm-hmm. They'd say, oh, they rejected the lab order. Or I kept going and the lab was closed. So they always blame other people.
Yeah.
So this is another very key behavior in addiction that is very interesting.
I have several examples of that, but we won't go into that. But on the basis of a survey of about 600 self-identified sex addicts, Dr. Carnes categorized addictive sex into 11 patterns.
This is very interesting.
It is very interesting. So just maybe keep a close listen and see what you think. Fantasy sex, neglecting commitment because of fantasy life and masturbation. And it's interesting that a lot of people do not admit to these behaviors. It's hidden, often similar to binge eaters, similar to those who purge. They will not
conceal.
Admit to it.
They've of course concealed. They conceal. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Seductive role sex, extramarital affairs, whether it's heterosexual or homosexual, flirting and seductive behaviors, these give them that oomph that they're seeking by these behaviors. Anonymous sex partners, that risk-taking, engaging in sex with anonymous folks and having one-night stands, paying for sex, trading sex, receiving money or drugs for sex, voyeurism, patronizing adult bookstores and strip shows, looking through windows and peepholes, having a collection of pornography at home or at work. Exhibitionist sex, exposing oneself in public places. I remember several years ago, I think some of the audience members may have heard about this one prominent person in the community who was exposing himself at the park. The police was called and he was arrested. You know, nothing happened to him.
And you know, that reminds me in voyeuristic sex mm-hmm. that there was a physician in our community in the greater Toledo area that... so sad, it's hard for me to say it, but he had teenage girls and they would have friends over for sleepovers. And that's why my parents never allowed a sleepover, which is another whole subject. But so these girls would come and this physician would, term for this is someone who peeps. Mm-hmm. So he was just, he had a whole system in which he was peeping while these girls were in the house and changing and, you mm-hmm. know, going to the restroom and stuff. So that is voyeuristic sex.
That's voyeuristic sex, in fact. Yep. Mm-hmm. Intrusive sex is also an issue, touching others without permission, using a position of power. I have... several people who talk about their bosses, you know, looking down on them as they're sitting at the desk or rubbing past them back and forth. Those are intrusive sex. And of course, they can go all the way to frank rape and assault, but there are various degrees of it. Pain exchange, causing or receiving pain to enhance sexual pleasure. And we talked about...
That's sadomasochism. Mm-hmm.
Those are listed in the DSM, but those are degrees. You have people who have masturbating with objects or cross-dressing to add to pleasure, using fetishes as part of their sexual rituals, having sex with animals, having sex with children forcibly or currying these little people to behave with them. So there's such a degree of the patterns that he listed that if you are having some of these issues, it is definitely important that you seek help, and there is help available.
And this brings in personal and family history. So individuals who end up becoming sex addicts have a very troubled, what we call adverse childhood experiences. A lot of them have been sexually abused as children. And they come from dysfunctional and addicted families in which parents can be chemically dependent and sexually addicted, abusive, and otherwise emotionally unavailable. And then they then turn the coping mechanism becomes that of indulging in the same behavior that they became victims mm-hmm. of.
Yep.
And there can be a combination of factors that can cause biological factors, because this is an addiction. So imbalances in brain chemicals like dopamine, what we just talked about, trauma or adverse childhood experiences, mental health issues, co-occurring conditions like anxiety, depression, substance abuse, bipolar disorder, behavioral reinforcement, habitual sex, just like food addiction,
mm-hmm.
there is a reinforcement with food or with sugar, and it perpetuates the addiction.
And it's interesting when you mentioned the bipolar disorder, one of the symptoms that may emerge in someone in a manic episode is hypersexuality.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yes, 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 indeed. And then the removal of all of the control that the human body has when the person is in the mm-hmm. Manic episode. Sexual addiction is often accompanied by other addictions. And understanding this is very important, because sexual addiction contributes significantly to the AIDS epidemic. And it often coexists with chemical dependency and is frequently an unrecognized cause of relapse, because they are co-occurring.
Co-occurring.
If one is treated and the other is not, then the
relapse.
What we call the reciprocal relapse pattern, in mm-hmm. which it continues. It's particularly true of cocaine addiction,
mm-hmm.
and people become trapped in this reciprocal relapse pattern, in which compulsive sexual behavior precipitates relapse to cocaine use and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
So a few case histories, again, will help to illustrate the relationship between sexual addiction and chemical dependency. So a 30-year-old salesman was addicted to cocaine and sex, left work early many days to go to his dealer's house, where he would inhale cocaine and drink beer. He then spent hours in a cycle of visiting pornographic bookstores to masturbate and snort cocaine, and then driving around while drinking beer and inhaling cocaine until he had recovered enough to visit the next pornographic bookstore. It sounds like mm-hmm. like a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
When he finally sought help for his cocaine addiction, he found himself relapsing repeatedly until he finally addressed his sexual addiction.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the key piece, in which taking the complete history from the patient is a very, very important thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he related, the sex addiction came first, but cocaine was like pouring gas on a fire.
Mm-hmm.
My relapses began with sexual behaviors, but because the sex and drugs were so interrelated and were part of the ritual, the sex served as a potent trigger for the cocaine, so I would end up doing that too.
Mm-hmm.
So to stay sober, he had to avoid, obviously, both drugs and compulsive sex.
Yeah.
So very key piece.
Very key piece. I remember one gentleman I met years and years ago, and he described his cocaine high as the best orgasm.
Oh, yes,
and
yes,
that's
yes.
That's the language he used, yeah.
And I have to, it's also a funny story. So when I first started my wonderful journey in addiction medicine, we were treating patients in our inpatient detox unit at St. Vincent, and one of the nurses who was in recovery came to me one day. I think he felt sad for me. And he came to me and he said that, "You don't understand, do you?" And I said, "What?" He says, "You don't understand what addiction is, do you? And why people use drugs." And he was in recovery from heroin. And he immediately got my attention, because, you know, you evolve through your journey in mm-hmm. life and through your journey in medicine,
mm-hmm.
And the way that we are, how society says something and then medicine says something mm-hmm. else. And in those days, we did not really consider, it was really not firmed up that addiction is a disease. We were kind of like getting there.
Mm-hmm.
We hadn't gotten there completely. So I had all sorts of conflicting thoughts and in my mind. And so... and he was so aware of that conflict. So I said, "No, I don't understand." And he looked at me and he said, "Doc, it's orgasmic."
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, "Oh,
okay."
And then I felt like telling him, "Say no more. I get it.
I get it.
Now I get it."
Now I get
so
it.
Yeah, he did say that.
Yeah. In making the diagnosis, this same physician, Dr. Carnes, came up with an acronym that he suggests we consider, PATHOS, PATHOS, in which you ask the person to consider, are they often preoccupied with sexual thoughts?
Which is the P.
Which is the P. And do you find yourself hiding your behavior, which is the A? Are you ashamed of the behavior? Because if you have to hide it, you know there's something not quite right. Have you ever sought treatment for it? Have you ever maybe sought counseling because you know that there is something awry with your desires, with your cravings and your pursuits of sex? That would be the treatment, the T. Has anyone been hurt by your behavior, whether emotionally or physically? If you hurt others, there is a problem. That's the H in the pathos. Do you feel controlled by your sexual desire, like you're out of control of it? That's the O. So if that is an issue that you cannot rein it in, then you may need some treatment. When you do have sex, do you feel depressed? Do you feel sad? Is there something not quite in sync with the cognitive and the behavior? So if you are sad and you have three or more of these symptoms out of the pathos, then it is an indication that you may require some assistance.
Yeah, I really appreciate the what we call, these are mnemonics actually. Mm-hmm. In medicine, they really help you remember. And I think the original one was the CAGE questionnaire that for alcohol use disorder. Mm-hmm. So these things really help us make the diagnosis. And, you know, there is, like you said, there is treatment. And that's the wonderful thing about medicine, that we have mm-hmm. the treatment. The key piece is the recognition. Once the recognition is made, either through pathos or the person themselves coming to the realization that there is an addiction, mm-hmm. there's treatment that's available. So in therapy, it's the treatment is a multifaceted one. And the first one is therapy. So we do cognitive behavioral therapy, trauma-focused therapy, group therapy like Sex Addicts Anonymous, or SAA, which provides peer support. It's based on the 12-step program. Another is called Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous, or SALA. And then programs modeled after Al-Anon, the self-help program for families and friends of alcoholics is also available, mm-hmm. and attendance by sex co-addicts is highly recommended. Then in medical intervention, we have medications to address underlying mental health conditions and to reduce sexual urges if necessary. Because a lot of times there are what we call dual diagnosis. Mm-hmm. There are co-occurring mental health conditions with sex addiction. So some mood stabilizers like lithium, Depakote, clomipramine, or anafrenil have been used. Prozac has been used, corticosteroids. And when I looked at chemotherapy or radiation, it was like a bit of a whiplash. But I guess chemotherapy and radiation and anti-androgens would probably be used in hypersexuality, which goes into the criminal realm. So, and anti-androgens are used for that.
I did have one individual, again, many, many moons ago, that we recommended the anti-androgen for him. He was developmentally delayed mm-hmm. and just impulsively reacting and reaching out to the other residents and the staff. And that's the only thing that helped.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. And another thing that would help would be opioids like morphine and oxycodone. And in fact, when we do treatment for opioid use disorder and we prescribe methadone or we prescribe Suboxone, we tell patients that it will cause a reduced sex drive and it will affect them sexually. So opioids have that effect. Ketoconazole is an antifungal medication, and cimetidine, a very old-time medication for heartburn, has also been used. Another way to deal with this is lifestyle changes, developing healthy coping mechanisms such as exercise, mindfulness, building supportive relationships and boundaries, and education and awareness. This is a very key piece because, and this applies to all addiction, that understanding your triggers, people's triggers are very peculiar and mm-hmm. particular to them, mm-hmm. and creating strategies to manage them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And even the 8 laws of health, you know, I call it health hygiene. Taking care of yourself will help you in so many ways, including sex addiction. So what is our take-home message?
Yeah, you're the take-home queen.
Take-home message here. If sexual behaviors are causing distress, impairing daily functioning, or harming your relationships, reaching out to a therapist, a counselor, or an addiction specialist is crucial. Early intervention or even late intervention. We are fortunate in that as sentient beings, we can change. If you want to, there is help out there. You can.
Indeed, that the half of the thing is the understanding, the recognition, and because treatment is definitely available and very effective. We really hope you found this episode informative, and we are well on our way in discussing the behavioral addictions, and in the next episode we will deal with porn addiction. I'm your host and producer, Dr. Mahjubeen Islam.
And I am Dr. Kathleen Daniels.
And our executive producer is the very talented Chris Pfeiffer. Please share this podcast with friends and family, for it is only through education that our society can be helped and we can stem the destruction that the disease of addiction causes. Just go to wgte.org/treataddiction or wherever you stream your podcasts. You can listen in continuity from the beginning or else just pick the episode that interests you. And with all the challenges of life, do remember, patience in difficult times and gratitude always. See you soon.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.